This is a summary of a sicha which Rav Amital delivered on Shal Shuris, Parshas Vayishlach in 2001. It's a sicha that characterizes or showcases Rav Amital's appreciation of our humanity within our Avodas Hashem, of accepting and acknowledging our humanity, that as much as we grow and adopt or transform into different people through our religious growth, we're still human beings. And to acknowledge and accept that in ourselves and read that into the others, not in a way that's looking to criticize them or to read their stories in a way that debases or trivializes their stature, but that at the same time recognizes that as human beings, they operated within the limits of human emotions and furthermore, the limits of human experiences or interactions with other human beings. And there were two such phases in Yaakov's career that Rav Amital studied in Parshas Vayishlach. Both surrounded the rape of Dinah. First of all, his response is very, very odd. Why doesn't he say anything? Why doesn't he interject? The brothers are committing deceit. They're committing something which is morally very troublesome, and he's extremely quiet about it, certainly in Parshas Vayishlach. Rav Amital felt that Yaakov was impeded from discussing this precisely because they were acting, as the Torah writes in Perek Lamed Dalet, Pasuk Yud Gimel, bimirma. And that word bimirma, which describes the deceit and the trickery they apply to Shechem, is the exact same word used to describe Yaakov's behavior in the eyes of Yitzchak. Yitzchak speaks bimirma in Perek Chav Zayin when he discovers Yaakov's subterfuge. So he can't chide them or chastise them for their own trickery and deceit because he was guilty of the same behavior. And he has the honesty and the humanity to accept that. Though he's the moral bellwether of the family and he's meant to be the mashkiach in our terminology and to chastise, he realizes that they're going through a similar process and a similar transition and a struggle that he went through, and Rav Amital didn't use these words, but his humanity humbles him and his humanity sets certain limitations of what he's prepared or not prepared to say. And I think that sometimes, I know myself as a teacher, I have to remind myself of this moment where I see Talmidim failing to live up to my expectations, and thinking back to when I had those same failures, or even my own life today where I exhibit similar failures. I'm not a teenager, but the failures may be somewhat different, but they stem from similar weaknesses within the human condition. And sometimes we cover our own failures by being more puritanical about rebuking other people. It's a way of projecting our failures and dealing with them. So when we see them in other people, and we're outraged by them. So Yaakov doesn't have that puritanical outrage. The second issue is, why does Yaakov delay his response? He finally gets around to criticizing them and rebuking them only in Parshas Vayechi when he's about to pass, and there's no interjection at this stage. And even when he does interject, his objection sounds very, very odd. He interjects for incorrect reasons. Instead of questioning the morality of their behavior, he's worried about the response. Vayomer Yaakov, this is in Pasuk Lamed, Vayomer Yaakov El Shimon Ve'Levi Achartem Osi, you have sullied me, lahavisheni bi'oshvei haaretz, to ruin my reputation. That's what Yaakov's concerned with, his reputation. What about the murder? What about the deceit? So Rav Amital felt that Yaakov, in Parshas Vayishlach in general, not just in this episode, is worried about whether he really is the selected one. He had those promises, and he received the dream in Beit El, and he travels to Padan Aram, and he meets with phenomenal success, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu yanks him out back to Eretz Yisrael. But now there's a brother who has remained behind. And just because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has delivered on his promises doesn't mean that Yaakov feels vindicated for stealing the Bechor from Esav. And Rav Amital felt this is what laces Yaakov's fear in the beginning of the parsha. Why is Yaakov so afraid, so cautious with Esav? After all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him that he will protect him and safeguard him. So as I'll speak about the fact that Esav had performed the mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael and Kibbutz Avraham in Yaakov's absence. But these are just test cases. What Yaakov's really afraid is that Esav had remained behind and had reassumed his position as a Bechor. And I've spoken before about Rav Amital's general cautious nature. At this stage, in the middle of the Parsha, Yaakov's afraid not just the moral ramifications, but the historical consequences, that maybe Yaakov will be discarded because of the behavior of his children. So when he says, Achartem osi, he's not worried about the petty quarrels that will erupt with the neighbors, although that's something to be concerned about, but about how this will reflect the overall state, the overall status of his clan. And that's a moral and historical consideration. And he can only then rebuke them once his selection has been fully confirmed and vindicated, which at least Rav Amital suggested, he didn't speak about explicitly, but implied, mainly occur in Parshas Vayechi, once his children are united and he's delivering the brachas, and it becomes clear and obvious that now he's been selected. Maybe this sense of confidence has been deferred even more than Parshas Vayishlach. There's a second issue relating to the timing, not just to when Yaakov rebukes his children in Parshas Vayechi, and he rebukes Shimon and Levi for their anger, for their murder, but of the death of Devorah. There's a three-section sequence. In the first section, Yaakov arrives at Luz in the land of Canaan, which is also known as Betel, and he builds a Mizbeach, and there's some closure to his journey because this Luz-Betel location was his point of departure in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, at which point Devorah, Rivka's nurse, dies and is buried in Betel under a tree. And then the third sequence is Hashem appears to Yaakov and gives him a bracha, renames him Yisrael. So Chazal say that, quotes from Shmuel Bar Nachman, that the death of Devorah is hinting to the death of Rivka. And that's why the death of Rivka is inserted in between Yaakov's building the Mizbeach and HaKadosh Baruch Hu receiving that Mizbeach, receiving that Korban, reciprocating with a bracha and with a name change. It's not just the death of Rivka, of Devorah, which is necessary, Devorah being the nurse of Rivka, but the death of Rivka. Until Rivka dies, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't conclude the journey of Yaakov and can't change his name and can't receive his karban. It's absolutely necessary for Devorah to die, or, as Chazal alluded to, for Rivka to die, because Rivka is dying, but in a quiet manner, in a more private fashion, for Yaakov to receive the blessing. Why? Because as much as Yaakov is uncertain about his past, it's not just that Esav had remained behind and had excelled where he had been absent, but Yaakov was afraid of his deceit, afraid of his sins. He had doubted his integrity, he had doubted his record, his past. And as long as his mother is alive, he still lives through those past deeds very deeply and with much guilt and with uncertainty. And this name change, which signals at least to Yaakov, it should signal to Yaakov that the past is forgotten and the past is forgiven and that you're now the Yisrael, you're now the chosen one, you're now bearing Hashem's name, that won't resonate within Yaakov because he still emotionally senses his past ambiguity, moral ambiguity, as long as his mother is alive. Once Rivka dies, then Yaakov reaches closure and Yaakov gets past his past and he can erase that whole episode. And now HaKadosh Baruch Hu can transition him from Yaakov to Yisrael. So though Yaakov is willing to begin the process before Devorah / Rivka dies, the process can only be completed once Rivka dies and her death is noted in a quiet, backhanded fashion by the mention of the death of her maid, Devorah. And now Yaakov can be transitioned to Yisrael. And the timing is right. And Rav Amital ended with a moral lesson. As we know, the timing is everything. And even though there are messages that could be inherently important, the timing is crucial. So this is a parsha in which Rav Amital helped us explore Yaakov and his personality and his human uncertainties. Whether it's the uncertainty of his moral position and that accepting that uncertainty and being a bit humbled in his rebuke of his children and delaying that rebuke, waiting until his position had been solidified in Parshas Vayechi, being uncertain that he had been chosen even in Parshas Vayishlach, and about his own misgivings about his past, which were cemented by his thinking of his mother and his consideration of his mother's role. Once she dies, he reaches a bit of closure. He forgives her. Obviously, when people pass, we're able to reach a certain degree of clarity and closure about their lives. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu can then transition him into Yisrael. So Hashem delays the renaming of Yaakov in response to the Mizbeach. And there's a separation or a division between the actual Mizbeach and Karban and Beit El and Hashem's response with the bracha and renaming Yaakov. Whether this is a chronological gap or it's just a literary gap, the gap is filled with the death of Rivka, alluded to by the death of Devorah, her maid, her nurse and assistant, because Yaakov had to put his guilt and the guilt associated with his mother's role to rest.